It's time for Let's Talk Money.
Good afternoon, Chattanooga. This is Let's Talk Money with Jamie O'Donnell and Jim Place. 267-1023 is the number. Starting our market day, Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 3 points, sitting at 34,949. S&P down 6, sitting at 4,431. So basically, markets are even for the day.
Hey, let me ask you this. I have to go 60 minutes without making an attorney joke?
No, you don't have to.
Okay. I'm just trying to clarify on the front end.
With us today, Jim Exum and Tim Gibbons. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you?
And doing great. With Chambliss, Bonner, and Stoeffel. Let's start here. Jim, why did you become an attorney? Are you from this area as well?
I'm from Chattanooga. I moved around a lot, but ended up back here, and my wife's an attorney as well. So Chattanooga's home for us.
Okay. Why law?
People told me I had a great knack for arguing with folks, and you know, one thing kind of led to another, and after college, it seemed like a really good option, so I went to law school, and I decided to come back to Chattanooga to practice. This is where I was born and wanted to come back home and have been here for 17 years now.
Any specific areas of expertise?
I started off doing a lot of insurance litigation, but have kind of honed my practice in now. I defend a police union, and so deal with a lot of police officers. And really in about the last 10 years, I've also started a family law practice with divorces and child custody and child support and things like that.
Tim, how about you? You have a little bit of a different story. You didn't start as a lawyer.
That's right. I practiced for 7 years as an architect before I decided I'd try something else and went and took the LSAT on a lark, and here I am.
And what's your area of expertise?
I do almost nothing but construction law, anything to do with buildings getting built, contracts, disputes between people as the buildings are getting built. Disputes if the building falls down and hurts somebody. I mean, anything to do with construction.
A topic for today in general, alternative dispute resolution. Can one of you guys give me an overview of what that even means?
Well, it means it's not litigation.
Okay.
Everybody, I think, has a general idea of litigation is you're going to go to court or the procedures leading up to court. Alternative is stated that way because it's not litigation. It can be a host of other things. It can be mediations, it can be arbitrations, and all sorts of variants of those.
Why do you not want to go to court? I know that sounds like an obvious question, but address the reasons it might be best not to litigate.
Well,
as the individual, not as the attorney.
Sure. As the individual, if you go to court, you're leaving your fate in the hands of a judge or possibly a jury. And one of the great things about alternative dispute resolution, and I'll talk about mediation, is you and the other party have the ability to craft your own deal. You're the captain of the ship, and you all can decide what's in your all's best interest. And if you go to court, you're leaving a lot of variables out there and a lot of opportunity for somebody else to make that decision for you.
Now, Jim, you did bring up a point when I said, well, there are no winners if you go to court, but you corrected me, didn't you?
I did. The attorneys are usually the winners when people go to court. We get paid usually no matter what. So, you know, when I'm working with folks in a family law setting and they're going through a divorce, we have to, by local rule, go to mediation before we can go to court. But it's just a good thing to do anyway because you understand the nuances of your situation better than anybody else does, and you'll be able to account for those if you work it out at mediation or work it out short of going to court.
Are there specific types of cases or scenarios where alternative dispute resolution is going to work? And maybe more specifically, where is it not going to work?
That's a good question. Whenever I do, and I've served as mediator a lot, and I've served as an arbitrator a lot.
Explain the difference between the two first, if you would, Tim.
Sure. Mediation is a voluntary, consensual procedure where parties simply get together with a third-party neutral, and they can't be forced to do anything. They can't be forced to agree to anything. But a good mediator will have the ability to, by separating the parties out, talking to them individually, telling them about the strengths and weaknesses of their positions, can oftentimes, and it has a very high success rate, get the parties to a number or a deal or something that they can both live with.
And the goal and objective that is, it's more likely that both those people are going to be more satisfied in the end.
Well, that's...
Historically?
That's true, although I will say I often tell people the best deal at mediation is when the parties are equally dissatisfied, which means...
Nobody got exactly what they wanted.
That's right.
Which is the whole point.
That's right. You gave more than you wanted to. The other party took less than they wanted to, but the process is done. You get to get on with your life.
That's interesting because I begin to see the distinguishable difference in what you're saying, because when I think of arbitrator, I think of a baseball player going to third-party arbitration, and arbitration is different than mediation, isn't it?
That's right. Arbitrator is basically a private judge, and I can make a decision in arbitration, and those parties are stuck with that decision. They can actually take that decision and go to court and have it enforced just like it's a judgment.
If that's the case, what's the real difference between litigation and arbitration?
There's a lot of debate about that among lawyers especially. My view, I think arbitrations are quicker. I think they can be cheaper depending on how the lawyers handle them. There are lawyers who can make arbitrations just as expensive and just as crazy as litigation. But for the most part, quicker, less expensive, and there are some rights to appeal or have an arbitration overturned, but they're very limited. So the last thing is finality.
And that's one of the things that I think a lot of people do not account for when they go into litigation is the time aspect of it. It's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of your energy. And going to mediation, going to arbitration, hopefully gets you to that end result a lot faster.
You bring up an interesting point there, Jim, because in essence, the system doesn't go any faster than what the court system goes.
Correct. And, you know, each court here in Hamilton County has hundreds of cases. You go to mediation, you've got a day, you've got maybe 2 days where your case is going to be the focus, and hopefully we can hammer out a deal in that time and get you on your way.
Tim, let me ask you this. How would have I ended up in one or the other, mediation or arbitration? I mean, because a mediation I could agree to. Most of the time in arbitration, there was some pre-signed agreement that said you would go to arbitration, and you're not really much given much choice. Is that correct, or...
That's true, and in particular in my area of the law, which is construction, most, although not all, but most construction contracts have mandatory arbitration provisions, and they typically have a provision that says you're going to go to mediation before you go to arbitration. And so in the construction world, arbitration and mediation are what normally happens. There are some other contexts that are similar to that where you have a contract that requires it. But you could also agree to go to arbitration. You can always agree to go to mediation. And in fact, a lot of courts, as Jim mentioned, will order that before you get to trial.
Does the fact that in arbitration you could have an arbitrator that specializes in that industry, is that one of the benefits? Like in our business, I know there's arbitrators that specialize in the financial world, or I'm sure in the construction world.
Right, and I'm familiar, for example, with NASD arbitration, which is required in a lot of the securities world.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to say. It's kind of hard to pinpoint. But again, with an arbitration, you don't necessarily wind up with someone who really knows everything about it. But like, for example, with the AAA, the American Arbitration Association, you typically can specify, for example, I'm on their construction panel, which means I do a lot of construction.
Well, I guess the other advantage, really, if I'm the third party that's going to arbitration, if I'm leaving it in the hands of a judge that really doesn't understand that industry or business, or I'm leaving it in a jury that understands it maybe even less out there, if I believe I have a legitimate case, I would almost rather go to arbitration, wouldn't I? Because you can look at a set of plans or you can look at the situation because you've been there and done that to some extent.
That's and that's a selling point for arbitration, particularly in construction. You're not having to educate a judge or a jury. I mean, if you're in front of a jury, a lot of them, the only construction experience they may have may be when their bathroom got remodeled and they're still not happy about it. So having someone who's been through that process and has seen a lot of the stuff, I think, is helpful.
Well, and I would think, too, that that less need for education would result in less cost, or it at least should.
That's true. And, in fact, I mean, the rules of evidence don't apply. And the rules of civil procedure don't apply. So, like, as Jim will tell you, if we're in court and I want to look at a document, I've got to step up. I've got to go, judge, may I approach? I hand the document to the witness. Do you see this? What is it? Can you explain it to me? Is that your signature? In arbitration, we already have all the documents. And so instead of having to waltz through all that stuff in a court, I just go, turn to tab 4 in your notebook. Let's talk about that.
267-1023 is the number. This Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money on Talk Radio 102.3.
We're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. With us today, Tim Gibbons and Jim Exum with Chambliss. Jim, let me go to you. Most of your careers, if I read it correctly, have been focused on litigation, and you've recently gotten into mediation. How's that transition been? Because it sounds like very different roles.
They are different roles, and it's very interesting hearing both sides of it as a mediator. So in litigation, when I go to mediation, I'm in a room with my client, and I got a mediator that's going back and forth. Now I'm getting to hear both sides of it and trying to ferry the parties kind of to a middle ground where they can hopefully resolve their case. So it's very different. It's hard to take the litigator hat off and think, you know, you're wrong and here's why you're wrong. It's, you know, I got to listen to both sides here and try to get them to the middle.
Do you like one more than the other?
I love litigation. I do. I love being in court. I love, you know, advocating for my client. It's always been my first love. So I really do enjoy that. But at the same time, it's quite a change of pace trying to get folks to understand that this may not be the road you want to go down. You may not want to go to court. You guys may want to get this resolved now as opposed to possibly a year from now.
Tim, what's your thoughts on that? Have you always been more on the mediation arbitration side? Is that
no?
Okay.
You know, when you start out as a young lawyer, what you do is whatever the partners tell you to do. So I've done a lot of litigation over the years. I'll be honest. I enjoy arbitration and mediation a lot more.
Okay.
Just because when I'm in court as the lawyer, I really feel that pressure. I've got to be the champion of the cause. I've got to not miss an objection. I've got to make sure I've dotted every I and crossed every T. And that's a lot of pressure. I mean, Jim handles it really well. I probably don't handle it as well as Jim does, and that may be the reason why I've gravitated more towards mediation and arbitration.
Let's spend some time on mediation. I think it's, you mentioned it, Jim, already, divorces, things of that nature, they're going to require you to go to mediation. Now, there's a lot of people out there listening, I know, that have probably been through that process, maybe going through that process. It's one that's easier for people to understand. What does the process look like? How does it work? And we can use divorce as an example, if that's a good one.
Sure. So the attorneys will usually call me and say, we've got a case that we need to mediate.
Does each individual need to have their own attorney?
They don't
for mediation?
They don't have to. No. Parties can go to court and get divorced on their own. They don't need attorneys. It's not advisable because it's a lot of nuance and it's a lot of rules.
Sure.
But they can come to mediation without an attorney. You know, sometimes we have one party that's represented and the other party is what we call pro se. They're on their own. They're representing themselves. But more often than not, both parties have an attorney. They come in and we put them in different rooms and we try to kind of work towards the middle. When there are kids involved, it's usually going to be a much longer process because we have to come up with a parenting plan about who's going to spend time with the children. Sometimes it's just a financial division. It's the parties don't have any kids, and we're trying to split up the house and the 401k accounts and the bank accounts and things of that nature. It has the potential, depending on the level of assets and if there are children, to be a very long, intensive, day-long process.
You know, one of the interesting things about that, Jim, we see the backside of that, people that come after a divorce, whatever it would be, how much stuff they got wrong from the way it was structured relative to what the real financial impact of their lives is going to be. Whereas I see Mrs. Jones that wants to keep that big, beautiful house no matter what, when reality split in two, she can't afford that house.
Right.
Where the financial aspects of it can be pretty significant. And particularly when I see someone that got out of divorce and wanted out so bad, they were willing to give XYZ up, and they wake up 3 years later and they are down a deep, dark financial road.
Right. And, you know, we see cases every once in a while where, especially advocating for one of the clients in a mediation setting, they're being given a deal where they're going to end up house poor. They're going to have this great house, but they're not going to have anything to pay the property taxes, the utilities, anything like that. So there has to be a really good understanding of your client's position and their financial abilities. And when they do have a financial advisor, that takes some of the strain off of me a little bit, because talk to your financial advisor.
Well, because otherwise you're left trying to play that role, and that's not your day-to-day role.
That's not my
day-to-day.
That's not
your strength.
No, it's not.
I need a good mediator, but if I've got a client out there, I'm explaining to them, if you agree to X, here's what you're going to have, here's what it's going to look like, this is what the... I mean, just a simple conversation to realize that the 12% bracket, married filing jointly, ends at about $119,000 with a standard deduction. Filing single ends at about $50,000.
And one of the things that we have to stress to them, either as an attorney or a mediator, is once you sign on the dotted line, you own it. It's yours at that point. And if you decide later on, I don't like that deal, we're going to end up in court fighting over whether it's a contract. And Tim will tell you it's a contract at that point when you sign it, and you're going to have a really good reason to want to set it aside.
Well, I always love the one where they say, well, I got $500,000 in cash, and my husband got $500,000 in an IRA. Have you figured out the distribution of that account in the IRA before you get to the other end to even out dollars?
Yeah.
A lot of times that's not – I have found attorneys that don't pay any attention to that, you know, that really – are not focused on, they're focused on winning the case for their client, but not on what the implications are going to be. Then I have another attorneys that are going, boy, you need to find the advisor, or they really kind of go off the record and start giving them financial advice to try to protect them.
Yeah, and I don't try to give financial advice. It's not, as you point out, it's not my strength. That's not where my abilities lie. But if they do have a financial advisor, I want them talking to that person to make sure that they understand what exactly they're getting out of this and what the next 5 and 10 years is going to look like for them.
What makes a good mediator? And I'll ask both of you guys that question.
I'm very early on in this process, so I can only speak really to my training and the few that I've done. But I'll tell you, you've got to just put aside the ego. You got to listen. You got to listen to the parties. You got to listen to what their concerns are, because very early on, they're going to say, these are the things I want. And that's going to stay with you throughout the day, and that's what they're going to try to work towards. So you need to have in mind what each party's goal is and try to work them towards that middle.
And I'm assuming it's not your role to tell them that their goals are wrong. Or is it?
You're not supposed to.
Okay.
Sometimes I will take the attorney out of the room and chat with them about...
Okay. Trying to lead them to reality?
Yeah, a reality check is a good way to put it.
I'll tell you, you first asked the question, what makes a good mediator?
Yes.
And there's lots of stuff written out there about the different types of mediators. Are you empathetic? Are you evaluative? Are you different sorts? I think the best mediator is one who can adapt his or her style to the mediation in front of them at the time. I mean, sometimes I have to be pretty forceful at mediation. I've used words that I can't say on the radio to tell people, you're crazy.
Yeah.
There's other times where I have to sit back and go, you know, I really understand where you're coming from, but let me tell you what the other side of that might look like. So I really have to adapt my style to the parties before me.
And I'll tell you, as a litigator, sometimes the attorneys are coming to you as a mediator, so you can be that person. You know, we have clients every once in a while who just are not going to listen to us. They have some notion set out that this is what they want, and they need a third party that's going to say, you know what, that's not right, and let me tell you what the other side of that looks like.
That makes a lot of sense where the individual or whomever is not listening to their attorney.
Yeah.
Well, and there's another great thing about mediation, which unlike arbitration or litigation where you cannot talk to the arbitrator or the judge without the other party present, in mediation, before mediation, you can call up the mediator if you're the lawyer, and you can say, look, my guy's going to be really tough on this point. You need to lean on him if we're going to get a deal done. I've had lots of those calls to me as mediator where the attorneys will call me and say, look, let me just tell you where there's a real hanging point here. And that's very useful.
He's actually telling you to walk his client back off the ledge.
Sure, if they want to get a deal. And a good lawyer, if a lawyer is really looking out for the best for their client and they understand that the best they can do is get a deal and move on, sure.
All right, let's use $100. We got a $100 bill here. How much of that $100 bill do we save by going to mediation versus going to trial?
I would say at least half, I would think.
There is motivation for those of you listening out there to find where the happy medium is.
It may be more. A former judge who I will not identify, we were sitting in chambers one day, and one of the lawyers said, Your Honor, I hate to tell you, this has become a matter of principle. And the judge leaned back in his chair and he said, oh, no. He said, well, let me tell you what you do. You go to your client, come up with what is the most expensive this thing could possibly cost them, and then triple it.
Triple it.
Principle's not free, and it's not cheap.
Do you get to pick your mediator?
Yes. Yes, you cannot.
Do both parties have to agree on the mediator?
Yes, mediation is totally voluntary. No one can be forced to have any particular mediator, and if you can't agree on the mediator, it's not going to happen.
Now, that's not true in an arbitrator, is it?
That's correct, because depending on what organization is administering that arbitration, they may have standard selection protocols you go through. And if you go through those protocols, like, for example, the AAA I've mentioned before, if you go through those protocols a few times and you still can't pick the arbitrator, the AAA can pick one for you.
In the case of mediation, how would I evaluate mediators, whether it be a business dispute or a divorce or anything?
You generally rely on your attorneys to do that. So,
the attorneys giving you the...
The attorneys know the other attorneys. They know the mediators. There's a set list of mediators that I use, depending on what kind of cases. It's people I've known for a long time, people I've litigated against, people that I think will do a great job. So usually you rely on the attorneys for that information.
Which is another reason to have an attorney.
Which is another reason
mediation.
To have an attorney, yes.
Well, and Jim raised a good point there. If I'm the lawyer and my client's going to go to mediation, I may have completely different mediators that I will recommend based on the kind of the case and the personality of the people involved.
That's a really good point. 267-1023 is the number. This Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money on Talk Radio 102.3.
We're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number with us today. Tim Gibbons and Jim Exum with Chambliss, Bonner & Stoffel. Let's go to the phone lines. Hi, Gary. How are you?
Hey, how you guys doing? I got a question. Automotive insurance company. I had a situation several years ago where I had a really nice truck that got totaled. And the insurance company, of course, didn't offer anywhere near what it was worth. And the body shop say, hey, you need to talk to them. They're not offering, even useless on the lot were a lot more expensive than what they were offering. So the contract with the auto insurance company say you have to use arbitration. They won't let you go outside and get a separate lawyer. You can't sue them, really. And they're all that way. You can't get car insurance unless you agree to that. Which seems kind of like coercion, but anyway, I finally got with their guy, and we finally worked out. It still wasn't good, but it was livable, I guess. But I guess my question is, what do you do in a case like that where, you know, you can't get satisfaction?
Well, I tell you what, let me start. If you come to be a client of Evergreen Advisors, if you go to a financial advisory firm, you are signing within the framework of an agreement that says you agree to arbitration, period, end of verse. That's not unusual, is it?
Well, there's just a page.
Thanks, Gary.
A page of history will be useful. When arbitration first came out, there was a lot of hesitancy for people to use it. It then became more popular over the years, and it started being put into more and more contracts. However, today, the pendulum is swinging
back
a little against that grain, and you can see it in some recent Supreme Court decisions and in other places. So in things particularly like Gary's problem with car insurance, there are some courts now that will say in the consumer context, we're not going to stick you with that arbitration provision. Not all courts will do that, but some courts are doing that. The employment context is another world where often when you sign an employment agreement, you've got arbitration in there, and there is increasing, courts are now saying, no, we're not going to make you go to arbitration. So there are sometimes ways around that.
Yeah, it's changing in our industry, too. We'll see where the Securities and Exchange Commission comes down on it.
But that's right.
It's being discussed. And I guess it's a matter of, is all arbitration binding? Can you have non-binding arbitration?
Technically, that's one of the distinctions of arbitration. It's normally binding and it's final.
Okay.
Those two things. So normally, yes, it's binding. There are some very limited ways you can vacate or modify an award in arbitration, but those are very, very narrow.
Is there an appeals process?
Not.
Oh, like there would be in a normal court case where you could take it to a higher court? Or
not typically in arbitration, although many arbitration providers now are studying and some are coming out with an appellate process within arbitration, where if you get an award you absolutely hate, there can sometimes be an avenue to appeal that.
I'm going to get off topic for a minute. We were talking about this during the break, but I wanted to go down this road a little bit. A common complaint that I've heard about attorneys, and I've heard this from a good friend of mine recently, they don't communicate. They do not explain. They do not call back. Are all attorneys this way, or should you be looking for a better attorney if you feel that your attorney is not communicating with you?
I will tell you, absolutely not all attorneys are that way. There are very good attorneys who are very much on top of their cases. If you find that your attorney is not calling you back, then, yeah, you might need to be looking elsewhere. We're in the service industry. I know a lot of people don't understand that, but people are paying us for a service, and when that service is not being rendered, it's like I feel about any time I'm not getting a service that I'm paying for. I'm going to start looking elsewhere. I'm going to start looking at canceling it. I'm going to start looking to see if there's better alternatives out there. So, you know, those are just some of the things you need to be on the lookout for, talk to your friends, you know, find out what their experiences were. But, you know, that's the number one bar complaint in the legal industry is lack of communication between attorney and client. And I know Tim hasn't. I've never operated my practice that way. I talk to my clients probably more than they want to hear from me. But, you know, I'd rather talk to them too much than not enough.
That's always been our approach as well. Going back to mediation, and I'd ask both you guys this, are there cases where let's say you're the attorney for the client, where you're going, there's no need to go to mediation. This is never going to work. Can you tell that on the front end?
I think the answer to that is yes. I think there's a lot of times where we look at a case and think, you know what, we're just doing it because we have to, and there's no hope that we're going to settle it. I've been surprised before. Sometimes you will go, and your client may finally see the other side of this and realize, you know what, this is not going to turn out well if I keep, dragging this out. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it is not useful, but I think it's good for the attorneys because it somewhat sets expectations. that if we have to go to trial, this is what you're possibly looking at. And you're not just hearing it from me. You're hearing it from somebody else, too.
You know, Jim, I asked you that during the break, but I'll ask it on air again. Of all the cases that come to mediation, what percentage of those cases would you say are resolved through mediation without having to go farther?
I would say in my experience, and that's just on the litigation, I'm not even talking construction, I would say probably 80% of the cases are resolved at mediation. And that's, if you look at just the family law realm, I think it probably is a little bit higher than that because there's a lot of issues that are taken into account there. What people don't understand really in the family law realm is there's a lot of embarrassing information that may come out if you go to court. And people do not want to do that. They want to keep it in a private setting and get it resolved. But I think there's a high amount of cases that get resolved by going to mediation because people finally understand for once that time is the biggest issue here. It's not the expense, it's the time that you're going to have to spend on this case going forward for another year waiting for your trial date.
Tim, when you're driving home at night, what gives you more satisfaction, arbitration or mediation?
I will say mediation, but only if I've been able to get the parties to get together and make a deal. I've actually had mediations where they didn't settle, and then I will still go back to the lawyers later and make what I call a mediator's proposal and say, if you do this, you have a deal. And then they come back and say, okay, we agree. I like that just because, I mean, it's not, I promise you, it's not taking business away from the lawyers or me or anybody else. But those people get to get on with their lives. And that, to me, is a big deal.
What's your take, Tim, on how often mediation is successful?
I'll tell you, in my experience, and I've only been serving as a mediator for the last 10 years or so. I've been in mediations as a lawyer for 30 years. With me as mediator, I've actually seen the percentage come down, what I'll call the success rate, come down a little bit over the past 2 or 3 years. But even now, I would say 2 out of 3 of the mediations in front of me are going to get to a deal. And sometimes when they don't get to a deal, they'll get to a deal later I might not hear about. But that's still a great success rate for situations where parties are not happy. You know, they each have their own side of the case.
There's a reason they're there.
That's right. That, to me, is still a great success rate.
267-1023 is the number. This Let's Talk Money. We'll be right back.
Let's Talk Money on Talk Radio 102.3.
We're back with Let's Talk Money. 267-1023 is the number. With us today, Tim Gibbons and Jim Exum with Chambliss, Farner & Staffel. We spent a lot of time talking about alternative dispute resolution, mediation, arbitration. When we talk about, we spent particularly with mediation talking about family laws a lot because that was an easy example and it's required if you're getting a divorce. What other types of disputes are well suited for mediation?
I would say just about any motor vehicle accident, slip and fall, there's even some businesses that will bring in a mediator to help separate from an employee. So they'll bring a mediator in to try to work out that separation agreement. But purely in court terms, you'll see most motor vehicle accidents, slip and falls, premises liability cases go to mediation at some point.
What percentage of overall cases end up in court versus arbitration versus mediation? I don't know if y'all know that figure.
Well, I think a lot of the ones that are in court wind up in mediation or arbitration. I mean, in my industry, construction, for example, if I have somebody who's filed a lien, I have to file a lawsuit to enforce that lien, even if my contract has an arbitration provision. So I'll go to court and say, hey, court, we got to go to arbitration. I think maybe a better question is, what's the percentage of all the cases that get filed in court that wind up at a final court hearing?
It's about, I think, 5%.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Really?
Very
yeah.
little.
Yeah, very few of them ever actually get tried. Matter of fact, when you usually meet with clients for the first time, you often tell them this will probably never see the inside of a courtroom.
Because at some point, if you do get in the courtroom, you got a judge also pushing. You all need to resolve on the front end of the case. The judge is pushing them to say, don't go down this road. Your attorneys are, if they're good attorneys, are saying, don't go down this road. And what you're saying is only 5 or 10% of the people end up going down that road.
That when you actually go and have a trial and get a decision, it's a very small percentage. Mm-hmm.
Are those that do that happy typically? Or do you think if they had it to do over again, they would have tried to work it out?
If they win.
it takes all types. I mean, some are happy, some consider it to be a huge waste at the end. But as I don't know if I said this on air or off air, but the only thing I guarantee people is both of you are going to end up unhappy most likely.
And that's not a great outcome.
And that's not a great outcome for anyone.
Tim, from a business perspective, would you, assuming it's a type of business where you have some sort of agreement or contract, would you put an arbitration clause in?
I would recommend it, and I draft a lot of contracts, and in almost all of them, I have my own ADR provision that says the first step is we're going to get our higher-level people together to try to work a deal. Second step is mediation, unless the parties think that's not going to do anything. Third step is arbitration. That's what I typically put in.
Is there any downside to having an arbitration provision in a contract?
Well, I mean, if it's there, it can be enforced, and some parties just don't want to go to arbitration. But if they sign the contract and there's the provision, they may be dragged kicking and screaming into arbitration.
Are there cases where, and I ask from the business owner's perspective, would you put that in a contract? Should an individual blindly sign one?
Well, I'm going to give you the typical lawyer answer first. You know, whenever you're signing a document, have your lawyer look
yes.
at it. So let's get past that. I think in some contexts, you would advise your client, no.
Okay.
Don't go to arbitration. There are some contexts. Like, for example, the caller who called in, Gary. Consumer context, I think better if it without an arbitration provision.
Yeah, it's just going to depend on the context.
Right.
Jim, Tim, thank you. Enjoyed
thank you.
It. Coming up next, the Dave Ramsey Show, 1 to 3, 3 to 7 Sport Talk. We'll talk to you all tomorrow.